Produced by women about women, Powerful Women Let's Talk is a series of interviews with women who have helped shape our community and transform who we are and how we live.
Well, hello, everyone. I'm Jennifer Moss, and thanks for joining us for another exciting edition of Powerful Women Let's Talk. And today's powerful woman is Dr. Nkechi Eze. She's an international scholar currently serving as a tenured associate professor of education and director of early childhood education program at Aquinas College. Dr. Eze, thanks so much for joining us today.
Thank you so much, Jennifer. I appreciate it.
So to give a little background, you have had a lot of experience in our community and you've received many awards that surely any powerful woman would enjoy. You're the 2018 winner of the West Michigan Woman of the Year. In that same year, you were also selected to be one of the 50 most influential women in Grand Rapids and also a YWCA Tribute Award honoree, and this is among so many other accomplishments. You're also a member of Delta Sigma Theta Sorority, a national and international public service sorority. So again, Dr. Eze, I am happy to welcome you to this edition of Powerful Women Let's Talk. Let's talk. Education, certainly a huge, huge part of your life. You prepare new teachers for early care and education, directly involved in the community, and you're a former early care and education worker. So I want to talk about early care. You work with children, some of which, or perhaps many of them, are vulnerable and low income. I know this is your heart's passion. Mm-hmm. So tell me about your work and how important it really is to you.
Yes. Thank you again for inviting me. I really appreciate this. My work and my life kind of goes together. I don't know where one starts and the other one ends, because being a vulnerable parent myself, I came to this country when I was about to turn 20 years old. So the community became the grandparents, my sisters, my sibling. I believe I met you at mm-hmm. Messiah Baptist Church, you know, just surrounding myself. So that time I knew immediately that having the community surround a family member who's drowning is the only way they're going to really get out of it. So education is very important to me because my father drilled it in us that we need to get education and all those kind of things. So seeing what the community and my husband and I was able to do with our own children, I knew that I have to help and other vulnerable children get a good start in life. You know, after mm-hmm. all, early childhood education really propels and prepares a child to move forward. So education is very important to me. And as you mentioned, as I train future teachers to work with the children, all children, mm-hmm. all children, not just the one that look like they do and all that, I also have to make sure that our children, especially the vulnerable children, are ready for when the teachers come. We have to get the children ready to be educated, but we also have to educate the future teachers. So there is no separation. The two of them goes hand to hand. So
I was going to say, it's like a big circle.
It's a big circle.
It's a trickle-down effect. It goes all the way around and comes back to the beginning. Yeah. So you mentioned your dad, and you were 20 when you came here. You are from Nigeria.
Yes.
And your father was a village tribal chief.
Yes.
And he encouraged you to always what?
Remember who you are.
That's very important. And I would imagine, do you take some of that and instill that in the children that you are trying to save from being in that vulnerable community or position?
Yes. Yes. Growing up, my dad, it really didn't sink in that much. You know, when you're a child and your parents telling you,
you're not listening.
Yeah. And daddy will always say, remember who you are. And every now and then she'll say, and who are you again? Mm-hmm. And I'm like, daddy, you know, or papa, you know who I am. Well, tell me, I don't know. So my dad instilled that in me. Remember who you are. So every time I'm shaking, every time I feel like the world is being mean to me, every time somebody get on my damn nerve, I will always take a deep breath and center myself and I'll remember who I am. And sometimes it means reminding myself, who am I? I will kind of mimic my dad's voice and say, who are you again? And I'll call my name out. It's very, very empowering when I do that. And working with the children I work with, I always remind them to remember who they are. Mm-hmm. There's something about that, because when you are a vulnerable child or you feel like you don't have anything going for you and somebody say, remember who you are, it centers you and it kind of brings you back to your core. But I also remind, especially with my kids as they start getting older, I remind them that who you are how it's like a double-edged sword. Mm-hmm. You know who you are. You are, for instance, my daughter. You are Onyinye Eze. You are Nkechi Eze's daughter. But you also a black woman in America. Mm-hmm. So you can't take one and leave the other one.
You can't separate them.
So for me, I am Nkechi Eze, right? I know who I am. My dad was a tribal chief. I was loved. I was brought up to go after anything I want, especially growing up in Nigeria where women are not usually seen. So for me to navigate that is very empowering. But now I'm in America and daddy's voice is telling me, remember who you are. You are Nkechi Eze. You're a woman. You have an accent. And sometimes somebody's going to use that to shake you. Mm-hmm. So I tell my children, you can't just go with the, oh, I know who I am. I'm this. You also have to remember the other part, because when you remember that, knowing yourself means knowing everything about yourself and owning it. So you see, when people used to tell me, oh, you talk kind of funny, it won't hurt my feeling because I know that. You're telling me what I already know by myself. And like,
and yeah, it's part of me. And so you are good with that. Basically.
And I'm good with that. It's part of me. And then when people say that, instead of being upset like I used to in the beginning, I say, yeah, isn't that powerful? That's me. Mm-hmm.
You don't talk like me.
Yeah, you don't talk like me. So you do talk funny too. Yes.
Yeah. So as you look at that and talk about what your dad instilled and knowing who you are, mm-hmm. have you encountered barriers here? I mean, you came here at 20. Mm-hmm. And how have you continued to move your career upward and onward? And what kind of barriers perhaps did you see?
Remembering who I am helped set the foundation for me. I also know that I needed to, knowing who I am is that I came from Nigeria, where the villagers know everybody, where I'm surrounded by that village. And I have to build my own village. I have to be a part of Messiah Baptist Church. At one time, I don't know if people knew that, but one time I would go to Messiah Baptist Church in the morning for Sunday school because that was my black family. I needed that. But being a Catholic person, I have to go to St. Andrews because I felt like if I didn't go to St. Andrews, Lord, you know, you're not being true to who you are. But I needed to build that family to kind of help guide me and all that. So I can also learn. I learned a lot about the culture. I learned mm-hmm. about how black women navigate the culture through looking at those powerful women at Messiah Baptist Church.
And through
which is different. Looking at how they dress, how the professional women, American professional women dress, looking at the women from Messiah Baptist Church. So I saw that and I was picking up that. So I encountered a lot of barrier in terms of the culture shock. Things are different. You know, the air is different. The way people talk to you is different. So many barriers that I have to navigate, but just always centering myself. Then when I get back, I know that I'm in my house and my living room, you know, we have all this Nigerian stuff all over the place. And it's a way for me to kind of center myself. And then I go back. So many barriers that I navigated in terms of just the culture shock, the understanding, and when you express certain things, oh, you're emotional, why are you angry, and all those kind of things. So, yeah, it's just mm-hmm. so many things, but making sure that you have a place that you ground yourself. In those days, in late 80s and early 90s, Messiah Baptist Church grounded me, you know, to kind of connect with that root, the African root that I don't have anymore, and being able to see those women and connect with them, most of them, you know, like you, I kept in touch with over the years, and that's what have helped me.
And again, that you can go back to the belief of knowing who you are.
Yes.
Each time. I mean, I would imagine that centers you, it grounds you.
Yes.
for the most part.
Yes.
So what about finding your own voice? You have done extensive work in the Grand Rapids community in early childhood. I mean, mm-hmm. not just here, and we'll get to that in a second, but how did you kind of find that voice for yourself, being comfortable in your own mm-hmm. skin, I mm-hmm. guess, to say in America, perhaps?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, I think some of them were a little bit accidents. Some of them, I was born with it. Mm-hmm. And I think that's why knowing who you are help you be your authentic self. Again, when my dad kept saying that, it didn't hit me until when I was removed from that comfort of knowing that I turned left, turned right, my parents were always there. Here I'm in America. And I remember the day I was leaving, my dad said, when you get to America, you don't have a father and you don't have a mother.
He said that?
Yeah.
What did that mean?
Remember who you are. Because as a child, I always had to rush to my dad. I have to rush to my mom. Now, and I remember saying to my dad, what do you mean I don't have a father? You don't have a father in America. You don't have a mother in America. He kind of brought it home. Mm-hmm. And that helped, you know, position my mind that I don't have anybody. It's just you here. And you have to literally sink or swim, and you're going to make it. And with the prayers and everything. So when I got here, I know who I am. By the accident I was talking about, I never really plan on going into early childhood education. No,
really,
I wanted to be a lawyer. You know, I was growing up in Nigeria where women didn't have that much voice at that time. Mm-hmm. So I knew that I wanted to go into law to advocate for women. Because I felt like they needed to have a voice. Why don't they have a voice? Mm-hmm. And every time I spoke up, I got in trouble about it. And I said, okay, I'm going to get into something that will give me the mandate to allow other people. So when I got into America, you know, just walking, I got into Grand Rapids Community College and I saw a brochure about child development. By that time, I was pregnant with my first daughter. I'm like, child development. I know the meaning of child. I know the meaning of development. But what do you mean child development? Mm-hmm. In Nigeria, we had more of social work. You didn't have really child development as a discipline. So I was intrigued. And I said to myself, if nothing else, I want to take a couple classes for the child that I'm carrying. I need to, because now I don't have a mother. I don't have an auntie. I don't have a grandma. Nobody to help me raise this child. So when I got into it, it did something to me, Jen. The books, the textbooks I was seeing, I would see children, black children, but they were such in a demeaning position, or they didn't look welcome. Mm-hmm. Or a picture of children from Africa or Guatemala were just, they were raggedy. They didn't look like the children I know. I'm like, I see children at Mesa Baptist Church. They don't look like that. I see, you know, I don't have a child. Then that's not the Africa that I know.
That wasn't the picture that you knew and saw firsthand.
It did something to my spirit. I don't know exactly how to say it, but it just bothered me. And when I saw a picture of white children, it was nicely kept. They were presented well. And if there's anything wrong, it was because of something they couldn't control. So a child could be under a machine with tubes and all that. Oh, you see, it's because they're sick. But African children or black children were not kept. Their stomach. And I'm like, no, no, no. So it became this internal fight. I will see that in a class. I'll control myself and I'll get home when my kids start getting, you know, I had my own children or any black child around me. I say, oh, you're going to do this. They would do it. I'm like, you see, black children. I needed to prove
to
my...
You needed to prove to yourself even. And so it became kind of an inner... Not a struggle, but a feeling that you needed to work in this and to help people see themselves.
Yeah. And then once I was able to prove it, it kind of drive me, you know, kind of really helped me to push forward and say, wow, you could do this. That's what really gave me the voice and say, you know what? These children cannot advocate for themselves. You need to say it, because I've tested it with my own children and I've tested it with other children that I'm working with at that time at Messiah Baptist Church. And I was able to own that because it was a knowledge that I gained myself. Mm-hmm. I have power over it. And, you know, I needed to get it out there. And I got into a lot of trouble about that. But
not in trouble now, because you have a great following and you are like one of the major presenters in early childhood education.
Yes.
I mean, you have that early childhood center. So, and your work also is far reaching. You've conducted professional development and parental education workshops throughout the U.S., mm-hmm. Australia, Dubai, mm-hmm. Hong Kong, India, Japan, Nigeria, yeah. Zambia, and that's just to name a few international spots. What was that like? Because your work is recognized. I mean, as you had that yearning to make a difference, you have, and thus you are internationally known.
Yeah. You know, when I started doing my work, first with Messiah Baptist Church, and then I got appointed to be a professor at Aquinas College, I started doing my work over there. And then when I was finishing my doctorate, my dissertation, I got a call just like that, say, hey, would you be interested to come in and do a lecture? I believe it was in Australia at that time. I'm like, wow. By that time, I've already started doing things locally here or even within US here. And it was exciting. It was really a little something that kind of helped push me up there, because prior to that, I felt like some people were still struggling with who I am, mm-hmm. and why I'm challenging certain things. One thing is that I challenge things when it doesn't make sense. It doesn't make sense to me that we're getting funding on a Black or vulnerable children, but we're not doing anything substantial for that. You know, we keep on just doing the same old, same old. And if you keep on doing the same old, same old, you keep on getting the same results.
Yeah.
So as I was challenging, you know, then after a little while, it was like I was pushing the system, but the system is not, you know, kind of changing or making things a little different. So I got excited about the opportunity to go to Australia and present. And I presented, and, you know, you do it one time here, and mm-hmm. people started hearing about it. And other people that came started inviting me. So doing that early childhood education work, doing teacher training, coaching them, mentoring them in the classrooms, and also parent education was exciting because most of the schools I was going to were international schools. Mm-hmm. So they recognized the strength that I bring. They recognize that the expertise that I brought. And I tell you, Jen, it felt so good. It was almost like people know you were coming. They were expecting you to come. They were excited that you were there.
They welcomed you.
They welcomed me. I felt good. And I was like, wow, I didn't get that kind of welcome here in some area in US. But it was because at one point I realized it wasn't really my accent. It wasn't really how I'm saying it. It's what I'm talking about.
Mm-hmm. What you were saying.
What
the message
saying.
And what you were trying to do.
Yes.
To get change.
Yes. And when I realized that, I felt better. Because mm-hmm. before I was like, what is it about me? Why don't they like me? What is this? No, no, no.
You're personalizing it.
Yes. Yeah. So.
But it really wasn't about you.
It
was
wasn't about me. It wasn't mm-hmm. about me. It was the message. And then once that clicked, I started feeling comfortable in my skin, and it kind of gave me that extra boost to keep on pushing. I'll keep on pushing and keep on pushing, and all the way to testifying at the K-12 Appropriation Committee in Lansing to, again, for changes in our policy so that our vulnerable children just need to have a fair share. They need to have a good foundation. They were not asked to be born in the environment they were born into. But if our society, if our community is going to be getting funding based on their situation, we need to put that money back in that community. And we need to empower our families. We need to empower our community. And our community cannot continue to be like that because of the zip code and all those kind of things. No, our children deserve better. So once I recognized that it was really what I was talking about, not me, that gave me extra boost in mm-hmm. addition to knowing
to
who I
am. To push even harder
yeah,
and to know to who you are harder. Doing that.
Yes, yes.
So you mentioned you have 5 children.
Yes.
Are they all grown now, right?
Yes.
So you've had such an accomplished career. How did you do it all? Because you said you were 20 when you came here, and then later on you had your kids. How did you balance all of that? Because you had such a great message that you were pushing and you had your own children as well.
You know, if I stopped to, at that time, I knew that if I stopped to think about anything, I wouldn't do it. Mm-hmm. I just had to do it. I also will say that I have a wonderful husband, really, who sometimes I'll tell him, you don't behave like a typical Nigerian man, because a typical Nigerian man will not just let you to be out doing all this work and all that. So my husband knows when to pitch in. He did a lot of school runs. He did a lot of getting dinners ready if I'm teaching most of my class earlier on, was also at night and all that. But I was very good in planning. I planned a lot because I knew it's very important to me, the message I'm carrying. And I think I've also internalized it that was my calling. Mm-hmm. At the end of the day, I'm going to meet my maker, and it's going to be, well, what did you do for those vulnerable children? So I planned a lot, you know. So on Friday, we did all the laundry, cleaned the house in the evening. We stay as late as we can, and then we sleep in, and then Saturday, I cook. I cook mm-hmm. for the whole week.
Oh, the whole week.
Oh, yeah. I cook for the whole week, and we package it in color. You know, sometimes the kids would joke about it and say, are we on the blue Tupperware or are we on the pink one? I say, which way? You know, yeah, just planning ahead. And I also got a lot of support from the community because mm-hmm. the message that I'm promoting also resonated with the community. So, and I've been very lucky that, you know, even within ELNC or with Aquinas College, I've always had been in an environment where people have supported what mm-hmm. I'm trying to do and all that. So I would love to say I did it all, but I really did not do it all by myself, mm-hmm. you know.
But that helped. The impact of others helping you kind of made it a balancing, finished that balancing act, so to speak. Yeah. So you do so much. What do you and your family do for fun? What's happening in the Eze household?
As a household, what do we do for fun? Believe it or not, just gather. We watch television. We go to church. And we gather, you know, barbecue in the backyard. Mm-hmm. Whenever the kids are, they're all grown now. So whenever they're home, we barbecue.
Family food and fellowship.
Family food and fellowship. I love that. And for me, just my work fills me up, but I like to listen to music and just, you know, just chill. You know, sometimes I could be in the house and not go. I'm not a wandering kind of person because I travel a lot. When I come home, I just like to be in the house, you know, eat my Nigerian food, just the house. Yesterday I was cooking and one of my kids came in and said, "It smells like African in here." And I say, it is African house and I love it. Yeah.
Well, hopefully you share your food because I'd like to try it.
No, I'm just kidding. Yes.
So what makes you laugh? What's laughter? How does it come about?
What makes me laugh is seeing children happy. Mm-hmm. Really. Seeing, you know, children have this authentic laugh that comes from their belly.
That belly laugh, right?
They laugh and they put their head. And it's the most silliest, stupidest thing ever that they will laugh in it. So just seeing that and when I'm reflecting on my day in the evening and I just think about what a child said and I'm just cracking up and the kid's like, well, my husband would say, what's so funny? What are you laughing? I say, you wouldn't get it. I say, well, what? I say, well, this 4-year-old said this. And I'm like, here we go again. Yeah, just.
But that's wonderful.
Yeah, thank you.
And do you have a motto or encouraging words that you might say to others as an educator when you work with so many others and dealing with family and friends, even a favorite saying or perhaps a motto that you might share with others?
For me, really, my work, and that's what I try to get the younger future workers to, even future students, my future teachers to understand, you have to personalize it. My work is so personal, and I think that's why I give it all. And that's why sometimes it hurts also because it's so it's very personal to me. And, you know, Maya Angelou, and I may not get it right, but Maya Angelou talk about when you know better, you do better. Mm-hmm. You know, it's okay if you didn't know. It's okay if you didn't know that this parent have 3 jobs and that's why she couldn't be available for the parent-teacher conference. Now you know. Mm-hmm. What are you going to do differently? Or are you just going to keep on sitting there saying, oh, they don't care or she doesn't care and all that? Make it personal. When I see any of the children that I've worked with or I'm working with, when I see them, I literally treat them like my own children because I've come to believe that if I don't take care of that child's future now, help take care of that child's future now, do all I can, that child is going to be in the neighborhood with my own children and it's not going to be pretty. So I need to take it like they are my own child and I have to make sure that they are ready for life, because if they are ready, my own children will be ready. My own grandchildren, future grandchildren will be ready and all that. So I'm not expecting anybody who gets into this work. This work is very, very hard. It's very emotional. Sometimes you feel like you did everything you do and you couldn't see it. Because in early childhood education, I really don't see the end product right
away.
That's
true. That's very true.
I wait 18 years. I wait 10 years. I wait 15 years before I see it. So you just have to have that belief that you are doing the best you can for this child and this family. And if you come in with that kind of attitude, everything will work out okay. So when I do that, I feel good. But when I feel like I haven't given it my all, then it bothers my spirit. And then I have to find a way to make it better and all that. So just that cycle that you talked about earlier.
Yeah, it goes back around.
Yeah.
But I like that. When you know better, do better.
Do better, yeah.
And I have to mention, you're a Laker for life, getting your master's
degree
at TBSU Anchor Up, right?
Yes. I love it.
Wonderful. Well, thank you, Dr. Nkeche Eze. And of course, I want to thank all of you for joining us for this edition of Powerful Women, Let's Talk. I'm Jennifer Moss.
Thank you.
Pre-
produced by women about women. These powerful podcasts focus on powerful women and how their strength transforms who we are and how we live. Want to hear more powerful women Let's Talk? Get additional interviews at WGVU.org or wherever you get your podcasts. Please rate and subscribe. Powerful Women Let's Talk is produced by WGVU at the Meyer Public Broadcast Center at Grand Valley State University. The views and opinions expressed on this program do not necessarily reflect those of WGVU, its underwriters, or Grand Valley State University.